Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory!
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 50 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. All right, this is Tech Talk. Good morning. It's another beautiful Saturday day in Chicagoland here. We've got some light snow outside and cooler temperatures, but you know what? That's okay. We'll heat it up in here. We'll keep things rocking and rolling. No Dave Sinaki today, so I'm flying solo. It's just Michael Tech Talk Kassler on WRLR 98.3 FM here, but we still got a great show for you. Going to have Jay Garman coming on in just a little bit to answer our geek trivia questions. Maybe I'll hit him up to save us from some of the boredom of the solo show that we get into. Although they shouldn't be too boring. We've got some interesting things going on in tech news and all sorts of good stuff that's been happening with Microsoft and Motorola, all over the place. A lot of gear and gadget news this week, which is kind of nice to get us away from some of the more political aspect of things. I know if Dave were here, we'd be talking again about these recalcitrant lawmakers from Wisconsin hiding out in Illinois, but you know, fortunately, without his influence, I'm free to just talk about any kind of flippant junk that I want to, which has to do with tech stuff, which is what I really love. I don't care about those lawmakers in Wisconsin, so we'll boot into that, and then of course, closing out the show, you don't want to turn off too early, because don't forget, near the end of the show, we always have time for our cool sites of the week, which is going to be some free, or if not free, pretty darn cheap and very useful, always useful, cool sites of the week. And then the podcast only song of the week this week is a real I like it a lot. I'm excited about it. I want you guys to hear it, so you want to stick around. And in fact, I just vetted it for the radio, and I believe if you're listening live streaming right now, which you can do either by tuning or dial to 98.3 old school on your radio, whether that piece of hardware be in your car or in your home, that'll work fine. But also too, if you're doing it on the computer, you can always find us on iTunes. You can find us at wrlr.fm and listen live right there, or you can also go to justin.tv/wrlr and check it out, see what we look like. Even I don't know why you'd want to, but you can. It's an option, it's a possibility. So, hats off again to good friend Steve Stewart and his awesome blog, Money Plan SOS. As I say, don't be afraid to be social. You can find us anywhere. Tech Talk at WRLR.FM. TechTalk.WRLR.FM. All sorts of places to hunt us down. And, well, let's dive right into it. Anyways, like I said, there's tons and tons of gadget news this week. One thing we've talked about recently, of course, was all the excitement and hullabaloo, I think is the way to say that. Hullabaloo over Verizon iPhone. Yes, that's right. The iPhone finally made it to Verizon. And the initial reports we got were that the iPhone was really crushing out on the marketplace and was one of the fastest selling pieces of equipment that Verizon had put out. Well, it turns out maybe some of those numbers might be a little bit off. The CEO of Verizon has come out and said, yeah, they are doing great, but some of those initial numbers, he's not really trying to defend those, it doesn't sound like. So there might have been a little bit of promotion. And that was kind of hinted at by some of those early reports. Even though the numbers that were coming out of Verizon were exceptionally high, the on-the-spot reports, the anecdotal reporters at the Verizon stores were saying, gosh, there's just not a lot of people here for the numbers they're talking about. But so be that as it may, unfortunately, in the transition from the AT&T iPhone to the Verizon iPhone, somehow nobody stopped to correct that darn antenna issue. I don't know if you recall this, but the AT&T iPhone was lambasted. When that came out, the iPhone 4 came out, and people kept dropping calls and losing connectivity, and the bars would suddenly, boom, disappear to nothing, all this good stuff. And what iPhone came out and said, AT&T, iPhone came out to AT&T's issue. AT&T said, hey, wait a second, it's not our issue. It actually turns out it's the antenna, that if you hold the phone in such a way that it makes this connection, it changes up the attenuation of your antenna, and that'll ruin your signal strength. So Apple actually came out and said, yeah, you're right. And in fact, to make up for it, we're going to send you a whole bunch of free cases, and that'll keep the attenuation from happening. You won't be able to make that connection through a silicon skin, which you could through your own hand. Well, guess what? Verizon is having the same problem. They're calling it the death grip. Consumer Reports is, and Consumer Reports came through and said that indeed, the death grip, if you hold the Verizon iPhone 4 in a certain way, this can, and I quote, cause the phone to drop calls or be unable to place calls in weak signal conditions. So, boy, you know, you just got to keep an eye out for it. Now, Consumer Reports went so far as to not even put Verizon on its recommended list, the Verizon iPhone 4, just because of these drop call problems, even though the device itself is still among the highest rated smartphones that it has on their listings. So basically, you know, it's a smartphone. It does a lot of fantastic things. It does it better than any other smartphone out there, but it just doesn't do very well as a phone, because if you hold it as you typically would a phone, your reception is going to drop within 15 seconds or so of that gap being bridged. There's a gap between the signals there that causes that between the antennas there that causes that attenuation, and then you can't make a phone call, and it's called an iPhone. It's not called an iWeb browser. It's an iPhone, and it doesn't do its job as a phone. And sadly, this is just as true on Verizon as it is on AT&T. So, you know, Consumer Reports gave the Verizon iPhone a score of about 75 out of a possible 100. Not too bad. You know, the top ranking was 76, which AT&T's iPhone, interestingly enough, now does garner, but also too, T-Mobile's MyTouch 4G and Samsung's Vibrant also received that. Now, I am not familiar with the Vibrant at all. Not really heard about it, not seen anybody play with it. I don't know anyone that owns one. So I was a little bit surprised to see it go up so high. That was just shocking to me. I've been a big fan of BlackBerry and RIM. Of course, the Droids and all of the Android type of stuff, LG and Motorola, Droid 2 and the Droid X and all this, all pretty good stuff. I've seen those and played with those and been very impressed. Although I've got to say one thing that is different between the Android and the iPhone, if you're looking for real consistency in usage and just tight, you know, usage. Definitely the iPhone's better, just because the Android operating system is being used on a whole bunch of different hardware, and that's the beauty of it, but that's also one of the downsides of it, is that because it is on different hardware, the different manufacturers can make different decisions, and some of the some of the consistency gets lost in that. But at any rate, if anyone out there is using a Samsung Vibrant or one of these other ones, I'd love to hear about it. Send me an email at techtalk@wrlr.fm. You know, I forgot to mention, you can also leave a voicemail, 847-984-0847, and leave us a voicemail, and we'll put you up on air if it's something that I find personally interesting. Anyways, I'm not going to make any guarantees. More gadget news, just really cool stuff. You know, we talked about the smartphones, we're talking about this, but the tablets are coming out. Now, Motorola Zoom, you've probably seen the commercials already, the Motorola role of Zoom is all over the airwaves, trying to get people really excited about it. It's on the Android operating system. It does look pretty darn cool. I mean, you know, its only major competitor, of course, is the iPad, as far as I can see. Now, the iPad 2 is going to jump out at you, supposedly within the next week or so here, and supposedly Apple is going to have enough on supply that they can meet the demand right away. So that'll be a little bit of a change of pace for them and for us that there would be that available. So we'll see if that comes to pass. But the Zoom, I think, is a pretty interesting piece of equipment. Now, our good friends over at iFixit, they love to do this thing where they'll take the newest piece of technology and they'll do what you and I just would not dare to do, which is to take this expensive, brand new, shiny thing out of the box and break it. They'll take it and they'll break it apart and they'll see what is on the inside. And then they post the pictures and the information of what they're able to figure out up online. And what I found really interesting, now they've done this with a lot of stuff. They did it with the iPad. They did it with the iPhone. They're doing it with the, you know, basically any type of new thing that comes along, the Kindle, all this stuff. Fantastic. Good stuff. Most of the time, I don't mention this because, you know, what's inside of it? Well, there's a battery. There's I mean, it's what you would expect. There's stuff that you'd expect. The Zoom, though, however, although most of it is everything that you would expect to find. It has an FM tuner, though, which I didn't realize. That was one thing that surprised me a little bit. But the other thing that it has is there is a PCI board on the inside of it that is unfilled. It doesn't have anything in it. Now, this might not sound like much, especially if you're not deep into the tech and the hardware of things, but what this should say to you, if you are a real hardware geek, is you can say, why would they put an open PCI board into this machine? Well, it's to allow them to expand it. It's allowing for easy expansion. Not only that, it is possible that these will eventually allow us to easily expand them ourselves, much as you do with your desktop computer. Maybe at some point you'll be able to crack open your tablet and throw in a new piece of hardware, new piece of device, something interesting that you want to do, like that. Hey, you know, maybe your Kinect will work with your Zoom. So you'd have an X Zoom Kinect as opposed to the Xbox Kinect. I don't know. Hey, I'm just making stuff up here, but I just find it very interesting. I think it's a great direction for the pad and tablet manufacturers to go to. On two different levels. One, for the consumer level, where, like I just mentioned, you might be able to upgrade and do changes and so on to your tablet yourself, which currently is not an option for your iPad. The iPad is completely locked out. It's also, too, not really true for the Zoom at this point. You know, they're not intended to be open. However, the other thing that I think that it leads to is a look behind the curtain at the manufacturing process for some of these pads and how they're going to start dropping the price. Once they start having the space in the room for leaving some open slots like this, then they can start really customizing some of the packaging and some of the end product in a much more economical way than they have been. As I said, up to this point, things are pretty much closed. There's, you know, one piece here, one piece there that they can swap in or swap out, and that's how they try to economize on the cost of production of the equipment. But the more kind of freedom and flexibility inside of these cases, and then remember, they are so small and so thin, but the more flexibility you've got in there, the more customizability that you're going to have to deliver to the consumer, the cheaper you can make the end product, but with more options, and then the more competitive you can be in the marketplace. And I think Zoom is doing that. I think they're taking that first step forward towards really getting to true customizability. And by customizability, I'm not talking about, oh, do you want the 4 gig or the 8 gig version. No, we're talking about, you know what, I want 4 gig, plus I want to have an additional built-in camera, plus I want, you know, Bluetooth this and an X-Connect that, and et cetera, et cetera. And they can swap it all in and you can build your own sort of idea. So we'll see if that actually comes to play or not. I'm not sure if that will be the case, but I sure would like to see it happen. And I think that the tablets are going to be making a difference. You see them everywhere now. You know, I've been walking through colleges. I've been walking through hospitals. I've been walking through businesses of all sorts and shapes. And everywhere you go, somebody's got one of those. You know, I take classes for my MBA. I would say probably, you know, it's not a huge number, but it's probably a quarter of the students and staff do have a tablet of some sort or another. There's very few of us left, the ones that come in now with the laptop, and I always have to search for a plug to plug it in and all that other good stuff. You don't see that happening as much. Now, you can't – the thing that still kills me with the pads and the tablets is I just don't see them as viable note-taking machines, at least not until you get a Bluetooth keyboard hacked onto there. I am a touch typist. I type very fast, and I can't do the little screen typing. That tappity thing just does not work for me at all. You know what we need to do now? I think what we're going to do is pull in Jay Garman. See if we can pull him up here pretty quick. Let me just take a quick look and make sure we've got all of our information correct. Now, Jay Garman, of course, used to be with Tech Republic. He's now with us. He's actually now with working with you know what? He's gonna come on in just a second here. I'm all over the place. You know, we're trying to work here.
Hello.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Garman. Hey, we got you on the first shot. I'm very pleased with that.
You're flying solo today, aren't you, Chief?
We are. Yeah, I am. It's the royal we. It's just me. so anytime anything works properly without Dave here to kind of fill the gaps, I'm always pretty excited about that.
Wow, that's an endorsement, I think.
Well, you know, the Skype connection worked. Your phone number was the right one. You answered. I don't know what else I can hope for, really, on a typical Saturday morning.
Well, there you. And as I understand it, Chicago is not currently experiencing horrible weather, which has been unusual for like the last season.
No, this is true. We've got some light snow, but it's pretty snow. It's that kind of snow where you look out and you go, oh, it's snowing. Not oh, it's snowing again. So it's not so bad.
It's decorative snow. It's not plot device snow.
Exactly. That's a wonderful way to put it. It's exactly right. Exactly right. Well, and we had some snow thunder too, which was fun. Some thunder snow, which I tell people actually used to be my nickname back in the 80s. But those probably had more to do with my lack of a tan and the 30 extra pounds I had around the waist than anything else. But,
and here I thought it was your street ball name that you, when you were just dunking on the playground.
Exactly. Here comes thunder snow. Yeah. Oh man. So you guys have when I look on the weather maps, I always see this kind of beautiful, you know, orangish yellow area down there by Louisville where it looks just wonderful and warm and not quite so snowy. And I think you guys have missed quite a bit of this. You got hit by the snowpocalypse like everybody else, but other than that, it's been pretty clean and clear for you guys.
Yeah, it's been bizarre almost. Storms have gone north of us and south of us at the same time. It's I don't know who's putting up that force field, but we owe them money.
Absolutely. Or your soul. One or the other. There's
there's no money in my soul, believe me. There is no fungible value on any commodities market for that piece of crap.
It's seen better days.
Yes. I dated actresses in high school. There's very little of it left.
Oh man. Ouch. And that is no offense to all those wonderful and morally grounded actresses that we all know.
You've met those? I'd like to meet those sometimes. I didn't know them in high school.
I've heard of them. I think there was an episode on Punky Brewster about one. So
right, yeah. They had all five of them on the show.
Yes. Either that or a Lifetime documentary. I can't remember which one, but I don't think it ended well either.
It was a very special episode of Punky.
That's right. Oh man, so we were I was just complaining about Verizon and how Verizon couldn't pick up the slack with their iPhone 4 and make it work without the death grip sort of problem and all that. What type of smartphone are you carrying around these days, Jay?
I have a Droid 2, mostly because I refuse to own a smartphone without a physical keyboard. And so I was stuck with Verizon because I can get that free from my employer. I wanted a smartphone that A, could work as a Wi-Fi hotspot, and B, had the physical keyboard. That left me basically with the Droid 2. Hmm. And I'm not disappointed with it. It actually has the issue of it has more features than I need, and that sometimes gets in the way. If for your Droid using friends out there, the single best application you can get for it is called the Advanced Task Killer that kills all your background processes, because it can run so much so often that it will lock itself up and you won't notice it. You know, because you've left, you know, Facebook is looking for updates and Twitter looking for updates and Gmail and Google Reader and the weather and everything else is running it. It'll just like stop working. So you have to open Task Killer and just kill everything. So it's too robust for its own good.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I was a big fan of my BlackBerries. And I had changed to that from Trio. The Trio had that problem constantly. I think I wound up having to do hard reboot, which a hard reboot with a lot of these smartphones means basically cracking the back open, popping the battery out, and then throwing it back in. I think I was doing that like twice a day. Some days it's just
good
absolutely
Lord.
Brutal. Oh yeah, I was so relieved to get off of that and me using the BlackBerry. I played around with the Droid X. I haven't played with the Droid 2. And then BlackBerry also too had they actually had one with the physical keyboard as well that's out now. I can't recall the name of it off the top of my head, but that looks pretty good too. If I had to choose a phone today, it would be really tough for me to pick between an iPhone and one of the Droid flavors. I don't know which way I would turn.
Well, if you're a recovering BlackBerry addict, and I had a BlackBerry before my Droid, there's the Droid Pro, which is a Droid that has the BlackBerry style always out keyboard on the bottom of it. And so, you know, it's got a touchscreen that you can enable and disable. But if you're just an old school, you know, I want to do my two thumbs all the time on the bottom, the Droid Pro is supposedly pretty good. I've not played with it much myself, but then it's a Verizon product. So if you're wanting to be on the same network as the new iPhone, you're good to go.
And have you noticed any decrease in service or bars or anything like that since the iPhone came available?
I have never had any trouble with my Verizon service. It's been very, very solid. And what saved me more than anything on this phone has been the ability to turn it into a hotspot. Now, the battery life is terrible. I will not, but that's true of almost all the Droids. The battery life is just terrible. I could get maybe 6 hours of solid use out of it. Mm. 8 if I don't really use it. So it's not a whole day. You know, I can't be on a long, you know, I got to turn it off when I'm on long trips for, you know, when I'm doing flight layovers, I don't turn it on between the flights just so I want it to last all day.
Yeah.
But it really gets bad when you use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot. But the other part of that is you can charge it directly through USB. So if I plug my laptop in, I can immediately start charging my phone and I don't have to deal with airport Wi-Fi or hotel Wi-Fi or, you know, restaurant Wi-Fi. I've got really good connection wherever I need to be.
Yep.
And that is worth its weight in gold.
yeah, I have not had a phone with now I've had the ones that you can tether, but I haven't had the actual hotspot phones, and that seems awfully cool. I would think too for road trips would be awesome, you know, driving, you could have two or three of you in the minivan with your everything all connected and all that. But that would be pretty cool. You could do some LAN games, you know, in the car.
You could. I wouldn't do anything, you know, like, I wouldn't, like, try two of you stream video at once. That would not work. Like, I wouldn't try and FaceTime from the front seat to the back seat, but you could definitely do, you know, you could all be on Facebook at the same time, but it can do four IP at cloned addresses. So you can have the four people in your hotspot. That's really nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not bad at all. That's not bad at all. Man, does it work as an actual LAN, too? Does it set up a little LAN connection between everybody? Could you do a you know, direct copy or direct file copies or anything between the units?
I think there is an application within the 50,000 Droid Media apps that come with it that will let you do that. I've not played with that yet. So it's native. It works like a hotspot, so it's just a hotspot. But there are, I think, applications that you can run that will do that sort of, you know, land in a box kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah. Now, speaking of, you know, using Wi-Fi and stuff, my Kindle that I've got has got Wi-Fi as well, and that has been fantastic. I, you know, they don't talk much about the browser in the Kindle, but with the Wi-Fi and the 3G connection with that, it's kind of filled the gap for me as I've been smartphone-less, that I'm able to get my emails when I'm out. I'm able to get Google Reader when I'm out and about and things like this. And it's really not too bad. I think probably the only reason they don't promote it more is just because it would cost them. But I've also too gotten into, I'm finally getting books now that I discovered my library has ebooks that you can grab. I'm finally starting to use it as an actual reading device, and I gotta say I'm starting to come over to the dark side. It's really, really handy to have some business books, to have a couple of fiction books that I happen to be reading. I'm reading some Richard Morgan right now. It's got some science books, a short history of nearly everything I've got on there. All these kind of things, and it's, you know, to actually lug those around would just not happen. I wouldn't have the options that I do now carrying the Kindle around. It's very, very easy.
Well, and what's sad is that for all the opportunities the publishers are getting with ebooks now, they're still not getting it, because a couple days ago the news started to leak that the major publishing houses are going to collude, I guess you could say, force libraries to start buying more copies of their ebooks because they're lending them out too often. So they want you to force them, you know, if you bought an ebook license and you've lent it out, you know, 50 times, we're going to lock that copy until you buy a second one, until you relicense it again, and then you can start doing again, because they just don't feel like they're getting enough revenue from the libraries.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, is that some of the ebook formats don't really lend themselves very well to DRM, and I think that that's causing them some headaches because, yeah, they're not seeing that revenue maybe as well as they wanted to or as easily as they want. You know, it's all kind of goofiness. I'm not sure how they work it out with the the books. It's kind of the same problem that Netflix is having, in that with their streaming video, the whole licensing goes completely haywire, because in the past it's always been a product licensing where you say, I'm going to buy, you know, 10,000 DVDs, and then I can pass them out and mail them around or do whatever I want to with them. But when you're really just buying one copy of something and then saying, well, now I'm going to let people stream it 10,000 times, the people just don't know how to handle that. And the same thing is with the ebooks. You know, a library buying, you know, 500 copies of a book is a lot different from a library buying one copy of an ebook and letting multiple people grab that.
Well, and it's not even about – originally they had worked out they had to buy so many copies because they'd calculated, you know, the average lending rates and whatnot. And they worked out what they thought was a good licensing scheme, but what the publishers had not factored in is physical books wear out. So if a book is really popular and it gets lent out a whole bunch, the library has a book sale, retires that copy, and buys a new one. Well, ebook copies don't wear out, so they weren't getting the renewal income they wanted. So now they're just going to force the libraries to give them renewal income, which I think is a little shady. I mean, I don't know how you didn't figure that out in your model, and B, I don't know how that's a library's problem.
Yeah, it gets a little dicey. It's like trying to I mean, basically, they're trying to replace their current revenue stream with a model that doesn't really have any application. It's kind of like the, you know, how we still CC things to people, even though no one really understands or remembers what the heck carbon copies were originally. I'm wondering if that's kind of the same thing that's going to happen with this e-lending theory.
Well, yeah, and if you talk to anybody who's really rational about the book market, which there aren't a lot, is that the book publishers are actually in a much better place than the music industry was, because from what they can tell, ebooks are mostly replacing paperback sales. So, they lose money in that, you know, their margins on ebooks are much smaller, especially at the price point the consumer wants to pay for an ebook, but hardcore readers still want that big, physical, fancy hardback. They still want that, especially for certain books, and that's where all the margin has always been in publishing.
Yep.
So it's not like, you know, where MP3s just completely wiped out CD sales. It's not that drastic. People still like their books on their shelves and want to hold them in their hands and that sort of thing. It's just that all the disposable reading they've done. Yeah, just like the web has just killed magazines, ebooks are killing the secondary, you know, paperback market, which, you know, they don't like, but it's really how it's going to be.
Yeah, the big thing that I see as a difference between the ebook, the way that ebooks are going to affect the market and the MP3s did, is that piracy with MP3s in a lot of ways kind of helped with the sales. You know, if you heard, were able to get and listen to some music, you wouldn't have ever bought it, but you downloaded it, you heard it, maybe you didn't legally listen to it, but that would drive sales of those CDs. I see that happening with, you know, the DRM-free Mobis, and I'll admit, I've got a couple of DRM-free Mobis that I shouldn't legally be reading right now. But I can tell you, I'm probably not, after reading one of those books, going to go out and buy it. And also, too, because of the rate at which authors typically, I mean, once you get away from the Koontzes and so on, with the rate that authors typically produce novels and so on, it's not like there's usually a huge catalog that you're going to go back to and say, oh, okay, well, I read this one free, but you know what I want to buy now is older, you know, three or four or five of the older ones that are out there. Maybe it's just me. I find that unlikely to happen.
And music has a repeat consumption value. Like, you don't listen to a song once and then put it on a shelf and never listen to it again. People do that a lot with books.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, Mike, the converse of that is that there are books that you really, really value. Like, I've known people that have read a book in a library, loved it, and went and bought the hardback to put on their shelf as like a trophy, even if they don't read it again. It's like, I just want this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the bibliophiles, the hardback is a trophy, the real book fetishist. So, the industry's got to figure itself out. The other part of it, the reason I don't have a lot of sympathy for a lot of publishing houses, is they're very bloated in their employment model. I mean, you know, they're like newspapers in that sense. They've got way more people than they need for the product they produce.
Yeah. That is very, very true. And I think that's coming pretty clear now, as you've got some, you know, and it's not jumping as quickly as I had hoped it would, but you are seeing more and more of these, you know, quote unquote, self-published authors that are having some, you know, some response and getting some success, measure of success with it, that wouldn't have been possible, you know, 5 years ago, even.
No. Well, and the real value that publishing houses have that they aren't leveraging well right now is their role of promotion and quality control and gatekeeping. Like, you know, once, especially, let's take an example of some independent record labels. There are some labels that you, back in the day, you bought albums that came out on that label, even if you didn't know the artist, because you knew the label only produced a certain kind of music and produced it really, really well. And publishing houses could do that. You know, if, you know, Bain Books is a really good example of this. Bain has a very particular kind of science fiction. They're very good at promoting it, especially with some free chapter giveaways in their backlog library. And you sort of know what you're getting when you get a Bain book. That's really, you know, sort of its thing. So That's a value a publisher can provide. That in, if I'm an author and I'm brand new and nobody knows me, sure I can self-publish, but there's no guarantee any of all the 10,000 books that were put on Amazon yesterday for download that anybody's going to pick mine.
Yep.
But if Bain puts their weight behind me, that gets me that kickstart that I need, and there's value in that.
Yeah, and that's very true. And I think particularly for, as you mentioned, for the bibliophiles. I know myself personally, even browsing through a brick and mortar store, you see new authors come up and all the time. And that is one thing that I'll take a look at is, if it's the only decision making factors that you have to put into it is, okay, who is the publisher for it? Have I read other things that I've liked that publisher for? And then also to some degree, Stephen King says this is the best book I ever read kind of thing, you know, the little promos in the beginning.
The blurbs.
Yeah, the blurbs. And if those are from authors that I like and respect, and it sounds like they might have actually read the book as opposed to just wrote something, because they got paid for it, then that'll drive me too as well. And that obviously isn't going to be possible with some of the self-published authors, although if you can get that sort of crowdsourcing of, movement of saying, hey, here's an author nobody's heard of, but you know what, if you've read my book, you're probably going to like this one too, and you get enough of that, and that can help build that momentum as well.
Absolutely. Well, and I think what to me is really encouraging about this, you know, Borders is going bankrupt, and that's sad, especially for a lot of authors who were, had money tied up in royalties through that. But what's really slowly coming around is the rebirth of the small independent bookseller, which I find really encouraging. The niche store where you go in, not necessarily for the product, but you go in for the atmosphere and the advice. I've been to places like where there was just like this little hole in the wall and they only sold mysteries. And you went in and you said, I read this, I really liked Sherlock Holmes and this particular Sherlock Holmes story. I want more like this, and they can like lead you to it, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And I know that there are independent bookstores that are actually toying with being friendly in that they set up an Amazon affiliate sale and they say, all we ask is when you come in and ask our advice that you buy through our site while you're there so we get our cut of the ebook sale. And that's not – you're going to pay the same price you would have paid at Amazon. We're just asking you to give us that cut, and that's not an unreasonable thing to ask, especially in exchange for the advice you're getting there.
Yeah. I can actually, that makes a lot of sense. I can really see that being a viable, a viable tool for driving sales, particularly if you're able to gather some basic information from the customer. You get their email address, make some quick notes while you're discussing or talking with them about the books, and then send them those affiliated links to their email and say, hey, we talked about three or four books. I'll send you the links. We'd really appreciate it if you do decide to buy, do it through these links, and then shoot them the email. Chances are they would anyways. Who's going to go try to hunt it down again if they've got the link right there in their email after talking to you about it? I can see that making a lot of sense. Boy, and here,
well, and then you get into all the secondary sales. If they're a little bookstore with a little coffee shop in it, you're going to go there, you're going to hang out, you're going to buy their $1.95 cup of coffee, which they're going to get a cut of, you're going to come to their events, and they become this boutique of your interest. And if your town has a dozen of those, I'd rather have a dozen of those than one or two Borders, personally.
Yep. Oh, definitely. And that's my dreams of retiring and opening up a little bookstore have perhaps not died. Someday in my 60s, maybe things will be a little different. One thing people may not realize about those Amazon affiliate links too is that if you do get one and you respect and you want to purchase from someone that's given you a link like that, anything that you buy during that session, they actually get a small percentage of. So, if a bookseller like that sends you the link, you purchase your book, but while you're there, you also pick up some coffee because you needed a refill on that, or you pick up, some gadgets or whatever. All of those tie in to that same link, and they will get some cut of that, which is great for the people providing those links. I think it's a good way to do it.
Absolutely.
So, well, we should probably get to the main reason I called you, which was all had to do with being on Jeopardy. we had a question last week about it was twofold. It was not only how much is the maximum you can possibly make on Jeopardy, but then also too, what are the odds that you could get that?
Yes, the maximum possible win, meaning you answered every question correctly, got to the daily doubles. The daily doubles were in the lowest possible dollar value squares so that they didn't take big money off the board, and you doubled your money with every daily double. It's $566,400.
Wow.
It's unreal. Now, the odds of you getting the board layout that you need, assuming that the place in daily doubles was entirely random, it's 3,288,600 to 1, which is pretty much never going to happen. But you know it's not going to happen because the producers set up the board so that it doesn't happen. Usually, daily doubles do cover high dollar figures, the last or second to last in a category. If the daily doubles fall in the worst possible positions, meaning they all take out high dollar clues, the most you can win in a day is $283,200. And all of this, of course, is predicated on every time you get a daily double, you bet it all.
Yeah.
You pull a Cliff Clavin from Jeopardy, which almost no one is ever going to do.
Yeah.
So basically, you can just based on where the daily doubles are placed, there is a swing in maximum earnings of $358,400.
Oh man, yeah. So they try to make sure that even the chance of losing that amount from them is not going to happen. Of course, I mean they're insured though too. I think to some degree on having a huge winner come through and take that much, aren't they? I mean, most of the game shows I know have some sort of game show insurance that they have. It's kind of like the when you have those cross court basketball shot things. Lloyd's will ensure that never happens, and then pay if it does.
Exactly. Yeah, that's totally right. Well, and to be fair, I mean, they besides the fact that you're almost no one's ever going to sweep the board, not even Watson. I mean, Watson had a computer advantage and still didn't get everything and didn't prevent the other human players from ever scoring. The most one day winnings on the show was $75,000 by Ken Jennings. So. You know, that's a long way from even the worst case, $283,200. That's still way lower. And he was a really good Jeopardy player.
Yeah, if anybody saw him live, yeah, it was pretty impressive. There was very, very little that he did not seem to know or be able to get a close enough guess on that you thought he should have gotten it right in the first place.
Man. Yeah, exactly. Man. So that has nothing to worry about. But, you know, it does make for an interesting Jeopardy question, I suppose. Just how many, if we were willing to play this to let you have the board by yourself, play on your own, and put the daily doubles in the easy spots and tell you where they are, I still bet no one could walk away with even $100,000.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. And I mean, you could even go so far as to say, even if you didn't have other competitors playing against you,
yeah,
you still would probably be pretty darn lucky to get close to $100,000 on that. So we were talking about last week, how difficult just the intro questions of trying to get on the show, those questions are pretty darn tough. So
yes, because they want all the questions to get answered. That makes for good TV. So the barrier questions just to try are way harder than what they put on the board.
Yep. And I can vouch for that. I did not make the cut, unfortunately. I was very disappointed, but it's heartening to hear that those are actually pretty tough, because I feel like I do a good job watching on TV in a no stress environment, of course, and watching what they do. Well, Jay, what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, yesterday the Space Shuttle Discovery launched on its last mission. The Space Shuttle program will come to an end this year. And when it finally gets retired, all of the equipment that goes with the shuttle program is getting doled out. Discovery itself to the Smithsonian, the other shuttles that are still viable, there are museums that are applying and vying to have them on display, all the training equipment, all the test articles, all going a bunch of places, and for not for cheap money. But there is one element of space shuttle equipment that's being retired that any local school or university can buy for less than $50. And NASA is encouraging people to buy this equipment. So what piece of retiring space shuttle equipment is NASA intentionally giving away at affordable prices to schools?
Wow. Oh, that's a great question. And that that actually might be a useful question if there's anyone involved with the school districts that are listening locally now. Wow. I'm really interested to hear that. That is one of the – I have to chalk up to one of the benefits of having been unemployed recently was that I was able to watch the final takeoff of the Discovery live on TV. And it was really well done. It was on NASA TV. And they had some great interviews with people that have been involved with the space program for quite some time and discussing the technical aspects of the liftoff and in what stages they were in and the as they went out and actually made it into outer space and so on. And it was really, really neat. And I felt like it kind of came full circle because I can recall watching some of the initial takeoffs of the Discovery when they were first taken off and watching those live because, of course, I don't believe I was working there. I think it was too young to be working. So,
yeah, you're not an old man, so yes.
exactly. So it's kind of neat. It kind of came full circle. Sad to see. Hopefully it's the start of a new phase in space exploration and not truly an end of our space exploration. And I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful that that's true.
Oh, dude, I'm already saving up for one of those Virgin Galactic flights. I need to get into some zero-G in my life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, save a space for me right next to you, and I'll we'll go up together and check it out. I would love that. You got to keep yourself in good shape because at least for me personally, I know it's not going to happen in the next 5 years. So I got to look and say, gosh, you know, what kind of shape do you need to be in for that? And got to hit the track and hit the weights every once in a while and make sure you're not such a wreck at 55 or whenever it is that you can afford this kind of thing.
Swimming is a good zero-G training, and it spares the knees. Swimming is a good plan.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. So any of those potential or hopeful astronauts out there, get into your pool, get into your local Y, and and start swimming around. Well, Jay, I'm going to let you run. I took up a lot more of your time probably than you expected today. So, but as always, appreciate it. Great talk, especially about the ebook stuff and all that. I always love hearing and talking about that and trying to figure out what's around the corner on that stuff.
I'm glad to do it, buddy. You have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot, Jay. And I'll get people to jgarman.net site one way or the other.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Take it easy. Bye. As always, Jay Garman, fantastic to have him on. What a wealth of knowledge, just an incredible breadth and depth of information and insight on so many topics. We love having him on, honored to have him on. JayGarman.net, you can get more Jay all the time at JayGarman.net. It is really a cool site to check out. He's got a lot of stuff going on there, although he sometimes puts the answers to the trivia questions up before I'm supposed to give them. So I didn't say that. I didn't tell anybody that. But yeah, if you get really stumped on some of these trivia questions, you can usually find them there. At any rate, you know what I got to do right now? Gosh darn it! It's time for us to flip off into some spots and all that. I will be back at you in just over a minute or two, and I'm just barely gonna have some time for some cool sites of the week. I promised it. I will not let us skip it. But don't go away. We're gonna be back as soon as I can bring us back. Thanks for listening. This is Tech Talk on WRLR.
This is Suzanne from Wonder Lake, and you're listening to WRLR 98.3 FM.
WRLR would like to take a moment to acknowledge one of our special members, Business of the Month, the Law Offices of Gary M. Foley. Their areas of expertise include Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcy issues, short sales, foreclosure defense, judicial sales, and landlord disputes. If you'd like more information about the Law Offices of Gary M. Foley, you can contact them at 847-986-2999.
Get ready, Lake County, because the rumors are true. WRLR and J Street Radio, in cooperation with Lake County Entertainment and Arts and Detail Productions, is going on the road for an amazing night of musical entertainment. Death by Stereo and Transit. Along with many other local bands, including Rule 22, Two Star, and more, will be performing on two stages. So come on out and meet WRLR's Jesse Mendoza of J Street Radio on Saturday, February 26th at Just for Fun Roll Rink in McHenry. Doors open at 1:30 p.m. with the first bands taking the stage at 2 p.m. and we'll be rocking the rink all night long. For more information about the concert, go to TicketRumba.com and use keyword Death by Stereo, or check out the J Street Radio page on our website at WRLR.FM.
Hey y'all, this is Brett
and Dennis from the Sunday Stage.
We want to send a shout out to our guys in the military across the sea. Let you know that we are live streaming at WRLR.FM and on www.justin.tv/WRLR. That's 1800 to 2000 hours.
Oh, you sound so official.
Thank you. And for you civilians, that's every Sunday morning from 9 to 11.
Wait, what?
You mean they can see us?
Yeah, and we have faces that were made for radio.
All right, we are back. We're back. What did I promise? I promised. Let me find it here. Yes. A couple of nice little cool sights of the week to top it off here, and then we'll jump right into the podcast-only song of the week, too. Don't forget about that. Boy, you know, it's always so tough. There's so many cool things going on the web. It's real easy to pick out three or four. It's tough to just narrow it down, is what I usually have the problem with. You know what I think I'm going to focus on this week? It's going to be a couple of things that might make your life a little bit easier. One thing is, do you got one of those ultra-huge monitors? Are you one of those people that's got the, 45 by 82 screen size or something? You know, just these giant monitors. But, you know, most websites now, it's kind of like looking at once you first got your big widescreen TV, and it's so irritating that most of the shows you watch are in that little box in the middle. And now with the big screen monitors too, it's the same kind of thing, is that the websites are really set to go for an 800 by 600 or some of them even for 640 by 480 on your screen size. And it's just such a waste. You look at it like, oh, look at all that wasted screen space. And I got to flip back and forth all the time. It's just stupid. There is a solution for you. Guess what? Slickscreen.com. Slickscreen.com. Go check it out. You can download this. It is, of course, free. What it does is it allows you to put up multiple web pages and multiple applications within the slick screen interface. It automatically keeps them organized and arranged and set to the right screen width and density. You can actually be using them and useful at the same time without having to monkey around with your whole desktop interface and all this. It's really a neat thing. As I said, if you've got that issue, go check out Slick Screen as a possible solution for it. I thought it was pretty darn cool. I do have a widescreen monitor at home, and I've played with it, and it is neat. It is just really useful, especially, like I said, if you're a real a keyboard jockey and you're sitting there and you've got a ton of stuff going, it's real nice to have. It reminds you a little bit of X Windows in some ways, for all you old school screen jockeys. And another one here I've got for you. Now this is pretty cool too. The name of the website almost says it all. Greplin.com. Greplin.com. Grep, of course, is a search tool that you have. Well, this is a search tool not just for what's on your computer, but for what's on the cloud. It's the search bar for your life. You've got a Gmail account. You've got a Facebook account. You've got Evernote. You've got Yahoo Mail. You've got your Orkut and your Twitter. Twitter and your Google apps and what I don't know what else you've got. You don't even know what the heck you've got. And trying to find who sent you a message about your friend's dog 3 weeks ago that you now have something that you need to know about it, and trying to figure out where it is, how it came in, and how to respond to them is virtually impossible. And Google's search bar is helpful if you're all in Google, but it doesn't help you one bit if you're doing stuff in Facebook and Twitter and Dropbox and so on. Gremlin is the bridge for all that stuff. You go in and take a look at this. You have to sign in, of course, your thing. So it depends on your level of security fear that you have, whether this is going to be something you want to do. But it will make it so you can search across all of them for keywords, and it will bring them all up in a single user interface window, and you can link right through. So if somebody sent you something about that dog in Facebook or in Google Mail or in Twitter, or they put a file in your Dropbox, it doesn't matter. It'll all come up as long as you use the right keywords. Check that out, gremlin.com. And we are over time. We're over time. So I'm going to hop us right into our podcast-only song of the week, which, you know what, if you're listening live, you are going to get to listen to it live also because it is good enough for radio. A great song. It's called Drunk Girls by LCD Sound System. It's from what he claims is going to be his last album ever. So this is the time to listen up to it. If you haven't checked it out and heard it, it's great. I love LCD Sound System. He's been around for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. So it's not really new, but it is good stuff. Just like the Tech Talk Show and WRLR in general. Hey, shouts out to Jay Garman. Thank you, everyone that's been listening and sticking around. Suzanne, customer Jones, also too, says she had sent in that trivia question. I could not find it, but I guarantee she had the right answer. She pretty much always does. Always a pleasure for everyone. Keep on WRLR and make sure and come back next week, 10 a.m. Saturday mornings, Tech Talk on WRLR. And hey, this is Drunk Girl by LCD Sound System.